Now, how is it being with such a genius? As you know, being married to such a genius.
How? It's hard. No, no. It's entertaining. How about that? It's really entertaining.
From Ohio with Love, it's Mike Adams, Justin Wasson, one very special guest, all this and more, on another great episode of The Break-Ins.
Hello there, welcome to yet another exciting episode of The Break-Ins. This will be the fifth episode. Bruce is in the safari of Kentucky this week.
Yeah, it's deep jungle out there too.
Yes.
Pretty much is.
Stepping in for him this week is the lovely Miss Jessica the Ralph Hughes.
Hello.
The woman in front of the man, so to speak.
That's right.
Jessica, would you like to, or should I call you Ralph in this episode?
It doesn't matter.
Can we get an explanation of the whole Ralphie thing, maybe real quick?
Sure. Me and Bruce went to the same art school. And our very first day there, we had never met before that, there was multiple Jessicas in the class, and he sat right diagonal from me, and everybody went around and introduced themselves. So when we got paired up in a group, he said, "So what can we call you to separate you from everybody else?" And I was like, whatever, you know, whatever, thinking he was Jess or Jesse or whatever. And he's like, "So we could call you Henry, Dick, Ralph." And I said, "Sure, you know." And so he started calling me Ralph, and other people in the class heard him calling me Ralph, and they had totally forgotten when we went around introducing ourselves. And so they all started calling me Ralph. So before I knew it, everybody in our graduating class for art school was calling me Ralph. Yeah, well, he told people in our class, because when they found out that my name really wasn't Ralph, he told people in the class, because they were like, "How'd you get that nickname?" He's like, "Well, actually, we went to elementary school together, and everybody in the class knew I didn't like tomatoes." And so he was like, "And this is the whole reason why she doesn't like tomatoes. We had a lunch, and we had tomatoes on our sandwiches, and then we had a play afterwards. And right in the middle of the whole play, she, like, Ralphed up tomatoes." And that's how it happened. And they're like, "Wow, you guys went to elementary?" He's like, "Yeah, but then, you know, I moved away and we hadn't seen each other back to art school." He's like, "It's destiny." And people believed him. So he made up. But that's Bruce, you know.
Justin, that explains why you and Bruce get along so well together. I mean, if you and Bruce had met under these pretenses as well too, Justin, your guys' first year of knowing each other was probably a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to tell a fib here and there.
Yeah, yeah. Justin one day had me completely going. We're putting out Michael Jackson music, and there's the Jackson 5 and then the Jacksons. And I said, "Why is there the Jacksons and the Jackson 5? And Justin goes, "Well, it happened around the time the Jackson 5 performed at the Apollo, and people mistook the 5 for an S, so that's how they became known as the Jackson." And I was like, "Seriously?" He goes, "No, I just completely made that up right now."
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I like Green Arrow, anything Green Arrow, anything Terry Moore, Batman. I like heroes that don't have powers, but they're heroes anyhow. It's kind of my thing. I think brains over brawn kind of thing. So that's what I dig. I think it takes a lot more than just a strong person to be. I mean, any strong, like, person with powers can be a hero. But for the people who don't have that, you know, go shoulder to shoulder, are more impressive. That's my view on it. I'm reading the other comics. Not your average, you know, Superman, X-Men comics, you know.
The stuff that usually ends up winning Eisner Awards. So, since you don't like the superhero stuff, is that why you're such a big fan of Tim Risen and the Chronologist, then?
Yes. Plus my personal connection.
Brains over brawn, baby.
That's you know what, that's an interesting thing that we're, you know, have you read the Tim Risen?
Yeah, I read them.
So tell us about it.
I like sci-fi. So, and to me, the Tim Risen is a sci-fi comic. It's not really, you know, the superhero thing. It's
a dramatic comedy.
Well, yeah. No, okay. Well, if Justin's involved, it's going to have comedy to it. I mean, because I've seen Justin's pages and everything, too. And, I mean, like, you know, I like the way Justin draws women, you know, and I've pointed that out.
From a woman, Justin, someone appreciates you drawing women.
Well, thank you. I try not to make them, with the exception of Stellar, I try not to make them too TNA-like.
Voluptuous, if you will.
Voluptuous, thank you. I've now got that far on the toilet paper for the word of the day.
Well, Bruce, when he draws women too, he's getting better at it, but a lot of his women look kind of manly. I read X-Men for a while, and it got, because I like Rogue, and I thought that she was kind of unique, just being like, I mean, somebody being totally cut off from any, like, touch from humanity, and, you know, and it got to the point where, like, I just thought, like, all the women in the book, I mean, were all kind of just being written the same, and it was a couple years ago, I don't even remember who the writer was, but I lost interest in it. One of the reasons why I do love Terry Moore is because he, like, with the way he writes about women, I mean, he writes so differently, like, in Strangers in Paradise, I mean, he had two completely different characters, and, I mean, one was strong and violent, and the other one was soft and emotional, you know, and women are different. You can't write everybody the same, because women are very different people, and a lot of them are impossible to understand. So,
because you're talking about, you know, Terry Moore and writing great women, with a juxtaposing. I did get to that letter, by the way.
It's a good word.
Thank you. Values and issues and mindsets. Do you read any comic books where there are characters? I guess they could be men or women that you just like. This is how people act.
Really, usually what happens is Bruce reads comics and he kind of knows my taste, and so he knows, like, he gets started on them, and then he'll be like, "Oh, you'll like this," or "Don't even bother with this." I mean, we were just going through old comics before, and I was laying out some of the comics, and he was like, "Yeah, you're not gonna like that." So, I mean, Bruce kind of filters what I read.
What was it that he used to call? He's your V-chip? Is that what it? What is the V-chip that used to filter all content for kids on TV and everything?
You know what, though? I have comics sitting here from 3 weeks ago that I haven't gotten to, so he knows. Because I cannot stand waiting from month to month for comics to come out. You know, I don't have the attention span to wait 30 days. So usually what I do is I let them stack up for a couple weeks, and then I go back and read them, because otherwise it's like, you know, for a story arc, because otherwise it's just like, you know, I've lost interest.
So,
and he knows that. So he gives me comics that like Captain Britain is one of his favorites, and he really wants me to read it. And it ended and everything. So now I'm going to go back and read them. But, you know, I couldn't go from month to month. So he pretty much knows that I'm not going to have a big attention span waiting 30 days. And in comics, they don't come out every 30 days either. Some of them take like 2 months or 3 months to come out. So he knows that, you know, I'm going to lose interest and move on. So he, you know, says, "Hey, this is like 10 issues into it. I really like it so far. I think that you should try it. You're really going to like how this character's portrayed." Because we've been together for over 12 years. He knows, you know, what I like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like I'm, like, so busy with just day-to-day life that I'm not going to, you know, I read comics and then I can completely forget what I read. And I'll have to go back and read it again the following month because I can't remember. I mean, I have, like, the last 6 issues of Farscape that I haven't read yet. And those are short story arcs. You know, they have, like, 4 issues and then it's, you know, little mini-series. So those are really easy to keep up with. And Farscape is one of my big things, so of course I'm going to read those. But, so really, I don't pick up comics at the comic book store and be like, "Oh, I might give this one a try." No, you know, that's what I have Bruce for.
Now this goes really kind of you as well as Mike. When Bruce is writing a story with Venus, does he ever come to you and say, "Hey, Ralph, tell me, does this sound like how, you know, a female would talk, or And the same way it goes to you, Mike. Do you, when you're writing a story, do you go to your wife and say, "Hey, do you think this sounds, correct?"
I'll let you go ahead first, Ralphie.
Well, Bruce, he, of course, Venus isn't his main character, and she barely has any lines in his stories. He doesn't really ask me about her so much as does the story between the characters make sense? Does it sound normal? With all the characters, he doesn't point one character out over the other. So, I mean, yeah, he really, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of girl characters. Now, when he was working on Dread Fox, he tried to make each of the women in his story have a different personality and had me go in and try to, you know, do that. But he had me do that with all the characters again. He didn't just point out either woman in the story. I mean, it was all the characters. So I don't think he really points out one character over the other. He's just really concerned about each of the characters having their own personality. He doesn't see it as a woman personality or a man personality. He sees it as the character's personality.
But you don't think that gender helps fit the character any better or anything?
Yeah, it does. But knowing how the characters are, I mean, I think that, you know, Bruce has talked to women before. He knows how women talk, and, you know, so as long as, you know, what you've learned, what he's heard and whatever is portrayed, I mean, it's not, I mean, he's not going deep in her head and trying to figure out her thoughts and everything. So, I don't know.
Well, Justin, you do a multitude of characters. You've done more than I've done. What about you when you're trying to decide between doing male, female, or something of another world?
Well, when I'm writing a character, let's just say female. I'm trying to think of that Jack Nicholson line from As Good As It Gets. But
I know the line you're speaking of. It's
it's not a good line, but
he's like when what does he say when I talk to a woman I think of a man and then I remove logic and reasoning or something along that lines.
Oh, is that from As Good As It Gets? Okay, yeah, I know that
one. Yeah. So I when I'm writing a female, I mean, I've written several female leads. I really just try to think of it as. I didn't try to think of it as a man, woman. I just try to think of it as a person. I think that has to do a lot with growing up for the first good little chunk of my life, at least the first 5 or 6 years, with a main female presence in my house. With my parents divorced, it was kind of just my mom. So there's a whole... I just think of just, I didn't think, okay, I'm going to write a female and she's going to be troubled by all these problems she's had in her life or feel like she needs to step up more. I'm just going to write a female as in a stronger, strong character.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, hey, let's go take down, you know, those people right there and destroy them, but... Just as she's just a solid person.
Just as strong as a normal, your typical male character would be.
Yeah. You, Mike, do you run anything by your lovely wife?
Not so much. She does. If I need to figure out like proper context of a word, sometimes she's more of my grammatical fix than an idea person. She's really good at fixing those little minor errors and tweaks that I would need and stuff like that. But as far as like input or anything like that, I really don't ask her really for it, and she doesn't really give me any of it. So not that I don't want her to, it's never really happened that way. Next time I do a script, I'll let you know, and I'll try that.
Yes. Say, hey, look, what do you think about, you know, in our new drama comedy, The Wacky Adventures of Lynn and Hench. Which you don't know anything about, do you, Jess, because you haven't read our book?
Oh, so
So you are a huge fan of Terry Moore, yeah?
Yeah.
And Mike, you have not read any Terry Moore stuff?
Unfortunately not. I have not had the luxury of reading Terry Moore yet.
I am also a huge fan. I had the complete run of Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah. A friend of ours used to put, when he found out a trade was coming out, would have it put, you know, he would tell the comic book shop to order it for me. But, you know, that faded off. So I don't have the complete run, but that is one of my plans on getting everything. So I haven't actually read one of the Strangers in Paradise in a long time, but I have read all the Echoes. And I was reading Mary Jane Loves Spider-Man when he wrote it, and Runaways when he was writing it. So
is this run on Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane already, or Mary Jane Loves Spider-Man, is that already done?
Yeah, I think it got canceled.
I'm a big Terry Moore fan.
And now Justin, is that a thing because he writes strong female leads? Or is it because of – no, I'm being serious, because Justin and I both have this conversation. It's kind of the reason how we came up with the idea of Plain Jane and Stella is that we really enjoy strong female characters.
Right.
And but is it the fact that he writes that, or is it his art style a little more?
His art first, writing second. I think he does a beautiful way of drawing – emotional scene. I was sketching out a scene for Tim Risen, issue 4, and as I'm sketching it out, I'm thinking, how would Terry Moore do this scene?
Oh yeah, I could understand why.
How would he draw it? And I try to think, well, I know I can't do exactly what he would do, but just how would he even attempt? And when I was writing, his writing is good, but just artistically, he does a great job with black and white.
Is it because it looks like a classic, you know what I mean? Like, you know how a black and white film today made is not what it was, you know what I mean, several years ago.
Right.
Is it something of that, like, nostalgia to it? Is that what it is? Or is it that some people are better at just doing it that way than they are of having color over top of it?
I think they are. I think when it was just limited to black and white movies, there was people that knew how to work in those areas. And then people, the directors that didn't. Same way with today with CGI. There's directors that know how to use CGI, and there's directors that don't know how to use CGI.
Right, we just had this conversation.
Right. And there's also directors nowadays that if they shot a black and white film, they say, okay, I know because I've studied the greats. So by studying the greats, a la what I was trying to do when thinking about the last page, studying the great Terry Moore.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think that with like old movies, like it was more about like storytelling and certain backgrounds and, you know, to bring out the people or, you know, certain things in certain placements just to tell, you know, for storytelling. Whereas with comics now, things being colored, I think the artists rely too much on colorists to like separate things and, you know, make things pop and everything. Whereas with Terry Moore's stuff, I mean, it's just very clean, he knows what kind of backgrounds to put, what make people pop. And then his facial expressions, I mean, I don't think anybody has anything on Terry Moore where it comes to facial expressions. I mean, you can tell if somebody's being sly, if they're angry, without even reading the words for the panels. You don't even have to read the story to tell what the people are thinking or what they're doing. I mean,
yeah,
I just...
When I ran into him at a convention, really, really nice guy, really just super nice guy. And he said something that he likes to do is take movies nowadays and put them, just take his TV and put it on black and white so he can watch it in black and white, see how it looks. So I went and did that with several movies for about a couple weeks.
Anything stand out?
Batman Forever. Woo!
Batman Forever stood up.
Yeah.
You know what movie I think would have been really good in black and white? Would
Schindler's List.
It was in black and white. Sky Captain is what I was going to say.
What kind of coloring do you like in comic books nowadays?
It really varies for me depending on the comic. I mean, I like really detailed comic coloring, but it depends on the style. I don't think it goes with every style. I think if the art's more realistic, then the coloring needs to be more realistic. If the art's more stylized, then a flat color is better, you know, or some things are better in black and white. I mean, I think color goes with style.
So you're saying like, if it's like, it should be more of a paint over somebody who draws very realistic, like, I guess you would go with like a Brian Hitch or, I keep thinking of Steve Epting too. Like those guys have a very real, you know what I'm talking about, Justin?
Well, I know. I don't know if Jess knows or not.
Right. Well, the point is, if you get what I'm saying, Justin, that should be a paint. And then, like, if you're doing, I'm trying to think of a.
I think the colors should complement the art, because really, when it comes down to it, for a comic, it's really art and the story. And I think that the color, whoever's coloring, just because they color one way, doesn't mean that that's the way the comic should be colored. I think the coloring should complement how the art is drawn.
That makes sense.
I think that adds to the comic instead of takes away. I mean, you could have the best colors with as much detail, but if the art isn't drawn that way, then it really takes away from the entire experience.
That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. There's been a lot of times Justin and I have looked through a book and we were like, wow, this just doesn't look that good. And then we look at an artist's pencils or their inked copies and we're like, well, this makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
So
I mean, sometimes I look at comics and I'm like, this would have really been it would have been a totally different story had the colorist went with the way that the art was drawn. So, I mean, sometimes the colorist can really, you know, mess up the art.
So what you're saying is you don't have a very specific style of, like,
no,
coloring. You like to do it. You like to match it with that, however the art style is.
Yeah. 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 Because really, I mean, I know how to color different ways, you know, and I've looked at a lot of books and stuff. I went to design school, so you had to learn a lot of styles and you had to learn a lot about colors. And, you know, it's like when I'm looking at a book, I'm looking at how the panels are laid out. I mean, I'm reading the story and I'm enjoying the story, but when I look at it, I think from a designer point of view, okay, you know, how does this all work together and stuff? And I know how things work together because of design school, but I don't think the average reader does. And I think that if they don't know how all that works and they go and they read a book, and they could probably, you know, they could get like a totally different opinion of it. You know what I'm saying? Like they could end up not liking the book just because they got a bad feeling of it, just because things didn't jive right.
Because like the
whereas the story could have been really good, the art could have been really good.
Right, the color didn't match the tone very well, so to speak.
Yeah, but then again, a lot of artists depend on colorists to make the stuff look good. You know, they leave out the details, or you know, they barely do certain things, and then the colorist goes in and makes it come to life. So I mean, there's different. You know, sometimes the colorist makes it too. So.
Oh yeah.
It just really depends.
Larson, he doesn't use like really extravagant coloring on his book, and Savage Dragon, I think, looks really good. Burns operating the same way with his Star Trek books right now. Like, I don't think there's a. I don't want to say it's not good coloring, because it is. It's more of the older style of coloring where they keep it. I don't know. I don't want to say basic, but basic is what I'm trying to get at, though, you know? As opposed to the very. Detailed and shaded versions of stuff that we've gotten over maybe so much of the past decade, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes think keeping it simple makes it a lot easier, but there are a lot of artists who, if they work with colorists long enough, that you can really see that they complement each other very well.
For independent comics, I mean, it's a lot cheaper to do black and white than it is to do color. I mean, not working for a printing company, I know that. I mean, the independent comics, I mean, a lot of people, when they think, oh, I'm going to get in the comics, and that, you know, they're trying to draw and, you know, and do these comics and they're adding color and stuff. I mean, they have no idea going to a print shop unless you're producing those in mass quantity.
Right.
You're not going to get it. You're going to have to charge like $8 for your book or something to make anything off of it.
Right.
And I don't think a lot of people in independent comics, you know, starting out, understand that. They're like, oh, I did awesome on this coloring, you know, or they get somebody who says, oh, yeah, I'll color your stuff. And they go and get these quotes, and it's like, oh, my gosh.
I think the only way as an independent comic book person that you can really get away with doing coloring is the online thing. Like if you just publish a comic online.
Yeah, there is sites where you can do that.
But that's
I know Bruce. Bruce looked into that, and it really scared me because, like, there was a site that he went to, and he was talking about getting some color comics printed, and they wanted the files in RGB. And me working, you know, I work on pre-flighting files and setting them up to print. You don't print in RGB. You print in CMYK.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, what are these people doing? And not only that, with your online, like if you go to a local printing company, you could see, you can ask a sea of proof and you can see what your colors are going to look like. Whereas if you're going with an online thing, do they send you a proof or... I mean, how does that work? I mean,
right. What
if you get these colors? And because everybody's monitors are different, show things differently because, you know, everything's calibrated differently. So if you send it to this online thing and you think on your computer, oh, my colors look great, you know, and then you send it there and it's like absolutely hideous. And then you paid this money for these that you didn't even see, you know.
Right. You ever wanted to go back and color your Gemini stuff, Justin, that you put on the MySpace page,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Actually, I thought about it. I thought about coloring some of Bruce's stuff, too. He just hasn't given me any color guides.
There's gray, and then there's different shades of gray, and then there's black. No, and don't get me wrong. The one thing I really like about Bruce's book is the gray tones in it, I think, look really good. I think that really helps add a unique dynamic to the book.
When you color, Justin, what do you what program do you use?
I use Photoshop, but it does not have CMYK because it's Elements. And if I had the what is it, the CS version?
Yeah.
The $500 to $600 version.
That's the version of Illustrator I have too.
You have the really expensive Illustrator.
I was going crazy when I got my Mac. I said, just put it on there.
I don't think that women and men have to be, like, so different in comics. I think that it's all personality. I think it's history that helps develop the character. I think their character is not gender so much. I really enjoy comics that have different kind of women in them. Some strong, some weak. I enjoy comics that have people who are just your average people trying to make a difference. Coloring. I think that colors can complement art, or they can break it. And I think that's pretty much it.
See, due to the recent trends in the stock market and the recession and the decline in the sale of comics, I really don't know what I'm saying. Anyways, I think it was really good to get a woman's perspective on comic books. I don't get to hear a whole lot about that, so it's really nice to get your opinions, Jess or Ralphie or Rocky Five, whatever you decide to go by today.
Whatever you want to call me.
Keep them in the kitchen next time. I'm never coming over.
It's really good to hear your thoughts on the coloring on certain comic books and what you enjoy. And I'm just glad to have you around with us today. That being said, I really don't have much more.
You started sounding a little Irish.
Did I really?
I really don't have any more.
So, hold on. Quick side note. Every time I watch a Harry Potter movie, I will go around with a British accent for about the next 2 days. And I sometimes wonder if I won't wake up in the morning because I'll find, if I was to, I'd probably find about a 6-inch blade sticking out of my chest where Liz is like, you were doing it in your sleep. I just couldn't take it anymore.
I've come more in touch with my feminine side during this podcast. But I think we covered a lot of topics, and I'm really happy. This might be the best podcast ever. I want to tell Bruce that.
Isn't that the beginning of one of the podcasts?
This is the saddest podcast ever.
That's one for you, Mark.
Don't forget the gunshots, though. That was so awesome.
All right, so, a pleasure. I guess I'll see you guys later.
Indeed, that sounds good.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
You knock like the juggernaut, sugar.
Maybe the best line ever.